Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America has become a tattooed nation. Once it was soldiers and sailors coming home from war, outlaws, bikers, pirates. Now it seems like every other barista and the mom next door has a tattoo somewhere. Today we'll look at a remarkable and much older tattoo culture from the South Pacific and the Maori people of New Zealand and ask how it might illuminate the American tattoo craze today. This hour On Point, an old original tattoo culture and the path we're on now. I'm pleased to be joined in the studio today by Karen Kramer Russell. She's curator for Native American Arts at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts. She's put together a new exhibit on Maori tattoo art, or moko, that will run through next year. Bold, often sacred tattoos that spiral sometimes right onto the face. You can see photos at our website, onpointradio.org. Karen, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Also with us in the studio, Whare Heiki, a Maori artist and traditional bone sculptor. He grew up on the east coast of New Zealand's North Island. He lives in the U.S. now. You can link to his Mauna Nui design studio at our website. He carries his own Maori tattoo art, or moko, on his arms. Whare Heiki, it's great to have you with us as well. Thanks so much for being here.
Kia ora, Tom. Thanks for having me here. I'm excited to be able to be here today, so it should be fun.
Wonderful to have you, and your tattoos are right on the table right now, so they're already part of our dialogue in the studio, and we'll sort of unfold them to our listeners as well. Karen, you put together this wonderful exhibit of photographs of Maori tattoo art, or moko, at the Peabody Essex Museum. Tell us about it. What is this body art tradition?
Sure. This exhibition is an exhibition of photographs taken in 1998 by Hans Nelleman and related wood carvings. And together, the photographs and wood carvings explore Maori moko as visual expressions of personal, cultural, and tribal identities.
Why tattoos and wood carvings in the same exhibit?
Well, that's a great question. Tattoos and wood carvings actually have a direct relationship. Today, as in the past, the same tohunga, the same expert artist, would have been working in both mediums. About 200 years ago, moko, Maori facial and body tattoos, were carved into the skin with a chisel called an uhi, and the same technique of chisel carving was used with wood. And so the tattoos a couple hundred years ago were three-dimensional and very textural. The surface of your skin was ridged and actually very sculptural. Mm-hmm. And so today we see more moko artists using Western electric needles, but there are some moko artists who still use the uhi.
Whare Heiki, I first came across this tattoo art in New Zealand some years ago. Once you see it, you never forget it. It's so striking, so bold, the kind of deep green hues often, kind of spiraling geometric patterns, and they can be right up the arm, big on the shoulder. They're bold. They clearly have a lot of tradition behind them, and they often go right onto the face. Yours do not, but it's not at all uncommon these days to see that. What's the story behind Maori tattoo?
It was an art form, Karen said, that developed from other forms into a way of identity, a way of marking who you were, what you were, where you're from, what your tribal allegiances were, what different sides of your family did and how you came to be where you are in life. So it used to be, in a sense, a very visual form of who you were. It was a mark of identity, and I find that it's still kind of happening today as the forms are developed and as it kind of undergoes a resurgence in New Zealand. It's very much become a deeply personal signature, if you like.
Now, for many years, under British colonial rule, these tattoos and other Maori traditions were banned.
Yep.
Did they really disappear or nearly disappear on the islands?
In some areas, they didn't. You know, it was the Tonga Suppression Act, and I know Karen mentions it in the exhibit with its influence on how Maori knowledge was passed down, and moko was one of the things that certainly started to disappear under it. And then there was this big push in colonial New Zealand, post-colonialism, to make New Zealand, it's their policy of assimilation for the indigenous people, and that was one of the ways that they tried to do that, was to stop Māori using traditional forms, and whether it be moko, whether it be going with regards to healing, just anything like that. They wanted to push them towards more European-based forms and systems, and so that was one of the ways to do it, and moko was unfortunately a casualty of that. That policy.
Karen, you've made a study of it. How do we begin to read the Māori tattoo, the moko?
Well, I think there are as many different meanings of the designs as there are people who choose to wear moko. You know, there are certainly, it is codified to some degree. Some of these meanings are not shared with outsiders, if you will, such as myself. In some, you know, I've talked with some Maori and done a lot of reading, and, you know, oftentimes certain spirals on your cheeks indicate your rank and status. In the exhibition, we choose to include quotes from the people portrayed in Hans Nellemann's portraits. And one woman in particular, Kimi Ora, talks about how the curls at her lips represent her children and the spirals at her chin are her mountains. And so it's just an example. And
I've seen it described as also, at least sometimes, revealing or recounting family history, ancestry, in the very body tattoo. Fadi?
Absolutely. You know, there are certainly, it's not as prominent now in that a lot of the very specific forms that were related to certain tribes have become more generally used. But you used to be able to tell exactly who someone was, what their tribe was, what their mother did, what their father did, where they ended up and how they ended up into their position. Now it's become much more personal in that those forms are now kind of have been incorporated in a modern way to kind of establish identity today. So, you know, a spiral that was interpreted one way 100 years ago would be interpreted very differently today, and it becomes much more, I think, maybe less broadly tribal and more personal to each individual.
I'm looking at quite an assortment of images right here of these tattoos, traditional and otherwise, from the exhibit at the Peabody Essex Museum. Again, you can see a good sampling of these at our website, onpointradio.org. I encourage you to check them out. They're really quite bold, quite striking, and across a whole range from what looks fairly traditional to what is clearly something very contemporary. I'm also looking at Maori tattoos right here on your forearms, Fada. I wish you'd, I mean, you're Maori yourself.
Yep.
And these are clearly, this is not your everyday American tattooing. This is on the underside of your forearms. They're very bold, kind of partly symmetrical, swirling and a bit geometric at the same time. This kind of dark green hue that I associate with this tradition of tattooing. What's the story of your tattoos? Can you share it with us?
I'd been wanting to get a form of tattoo for a long time. And then it was, once I started the process of becoming a carver, I looked at what that meant to me, what was the process that I used to kind of develop my ideas, and I decided to get a tattoo that reflected the idea that any sort of creative endeavor, you take what's around you, you run it through the filter of your mind, and then it comes out your hands.
There's especially tradition here as well, though.
Yes, absolutely. So what I did is I used a form of mask called Tarefiti, which is a certain style of mask, and that was my oldest brother who was killed. That was his name. And so what I did is I took that idea and then used that to represent what I do in life. And it represents, this is the top knot here of the carving, and it represents kind of knowledge. These are the eyes looking forward.
Oh, I see a mask, kind of an abstract mask represented here, yes, on your arm.
The mouth form running out in the hand, and it just represents to me the idea of running through the filter of your mind and then out your hands. And this one is done in blue to represent the ocean, which is a huge influence on me.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's done with a green to represent the earth, which is the other major influence in my work.
And they're wide and strong all the way from the crook of your arm down to your wrist. If you meet, here in the States or back in New Zealand, other Maori, and they see your tattoos, as we do sitting here right now, can they read them? Will they?
No.
Is there a message here, or is it more a more private expression than that?
It's a more private expression, and most moko now are done to reflect the person's individual. I couldn't go to look at a moko now and really know exactly what's going on. I could see broader forms within it, but ultimately the person, whether they would want to share what their moko meant to me, then they would tell me.
As a Maori person, when you see American tattoos today, and it's not hard to do, they are all over the place. Do they look in like from an entirely different universe to you? Do you relate to what young and not so young Americans are doing with those tattoos? Do they look meaningful or something else?
That's a tough question. It's a bigger question than I think I can answer. But I think when I look at them, it stuns me that people will go in and get, and I don't mean this in any disrespect around because I know you have a bit of flash, but I can't believe that people would go in and pick something off a wall and get it to represent where they are in life. I would have done exactly the same if I was 16 and in Amsterdam, absolutely.
And you're saying as opposed to drawing on a deep cultural tradition?
Whatever your cultural tradition is, you know, whether your ancestry is, you know, Portuguese, Latino, whatever you are here in the States, I think that ultimately you should be drawing from that before you get a tattoo of anything. And it stuns me that people will go in and get a koi fish or will get something that's, you know, outside of their outside of their culture, whatever that culture might be in terms of here. And even in the States, there's an incredible cultural history to draw from, and I can't believe that people don't do that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about an old original tattoo body art culture, the Maori people of New Zealand, and America's tattoo culture today. I've been joined by Karen Kramer Russell. She's curator of Native American arts at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts, where there's quite an exhibit underway right now. It's called Body Politics, Maori Tattoo Today. Runs through next year. You can see photos from that exhibit at our website, onpointradio.org. We're also very pleased to be joined by Whare Heiki. He is a Maori bone carver. His studio is Moana Nui Designs in Watertown, Massachusetts, and he's in the studio today with his quite bold and wonderful tattoos himself. You may have some familiarity with the Maori culture from the 2002 film Whale Rider. It's set among the Maori in contemporary New Zealand. Here's a scene where the girl at the heart of the story, Pakia, played by Keisha Castle-Hughes, talks about Maori history with her stoic grandfather, Koro, played by Rawahiri Panatene, as he fixes his motorboat. They talk about a legendary tribal figure, also named Pakia, who is regarded as the original ancestor.
At school, we got to do a speech on where we come from and that. So anyway, you know how we all came on a whale?
That's right.
But where did the whale come from?
From Hawaiki.
Where's that?
It's where we lived before we came here, where the ancestors are.
So Pakia came from there?
Aye.
How long ago?
Long time.
A taste of Maori culture as told, at least in film there, in the scene from 2002 film Whale Rider. You can join us, 800-423-8255. These are quite incredible tattoos. You may have your own. What do you make of an old body art culture like this and the American tattoo culture today? Let's take a call from American Falls, Idaho, and Todd. Hi, Todd. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just wish to express opinion that my culture here in the United States, my culture is Mormon or LDS.
Okay.
And yes, and that we're taught that the tattooing of the body is a desecration, that tattooing takes away from the original intent of the human body in the first place, and that it is wrong to do tattooing or body piercing, and that I understand the culture of the Maoris, and that I respect their culture, but they need to understand that there are different points of view in how people view themselves and tattooing. I'll take my comments off there. Thanks.
Todd, thank you very much for calling. Father, let me come to you first. I mean, it's interesting. You know, it's so common today, tattooing in the States, but I do recall a time, I didn't grow up Mormon at all, but I was in a culture, a rural culture, where I think there was a little bit of the sense that tattooing equals a kind of desecration, body sort of sacred, you know, pure just as it is. On the other hand, you're in a tradition where the tattoos themselves were certainly part of a kind of sacred tradition. So what do you think of Todd's perspective?
I think it's a valid one. You know, ultimately, people people talk about respecting Indigenous cultures as long as they're not fully fleshed or fully expressed sometimes. And this is certainly just one element of our culture being expressed. And I guess it's hard to look at it differently when you're brought up around it. It's a part of your culture, it's your history, and it's a way that you can identify who you are, what you are. And the tattoos are so deeply personal that I don't know what would replace it if these were banned in terms of how you would express, you know. And I think that was one of the problems that happened with the Tonga Suppression Act. There was no other outlet for much of the identity, and you know, outside of things like tukutuku, which are the woven panels and some of the carving styles, but
took away a facet of deep Maori culture when the British
identity,
colonial
yeah.
folks banned it.
Yeah.
Karen, the body clearly is not just any any creature. It's our bodies. This notion of sacredness or profaning the body certainly is out there in different cultures. How do you look at it in your study of tattooing, whether Maori or you also are a student of Native American culture? Mm-hmm. This sort of line and where we are with it today, is it even an issue in current American tattoo culture?
Well, I think tattoos in general, particularly in America, have become so mainstream. You know, back in the 19th century, it was more common for sailors to be tattooed, and from there, the tradition sort of has grown.
And sailors who, number of whom, brought home tales mm-hmm. of tattoos like yours, Fade, from the South Seas.
Exactly. But I think over time, it has changed from something that was very counterculture and rebellious to a mode of personal expression that's much more mainstream and accepted today.
When you went out to look at Maori moko tattooing, what did it make you think about your own tattoos? And by the way, I can't see them. Do you have one, five, ten?
I actually have one tattoo, a small daisy on my hip. And what is interesting about that, it's not the flash art daisy that's particularly interesting. I got my tattoo when I was 16 in Amsterdam, far from home, no mom in sight. And so it was perhaps an attempt at being cool when I was an adolescent.
I've been around. I've traveled. I've got a daisy on my hip.
Right. But what's actually interesting to me in learning more about moko is the process that I went through is pretty much the polar opposite process of what many Maori go through when they decide to get a tattoo.
Meaning
a moko.
What?
You know, some people have been thinking about getting moko since they were 4 years old, and it's a process that involves permission that you seek from your parents and elders in the community, and sometimes designs are decided upon together. And from there, when you get permission from the elders and they think you're ready, and you will talk to a moko artist about your design and what it means to you and how they can best articulate this visually on your skin. Moko are meant to enhance the contours of your face and body, and so oftentimes designs will be created to enhance these bone structures and muscles. And
unlike in the U.S. these days, you'll see plenty of guys at the beach every summer with the barbed wire and the kind of moko-style bands almost around their upper arms, mm-hmm. particularly if they're well-muscled upper arms. Fare?
Yeah, Karen was talking about, you know, speaking from my experience, I was deciding on this process of getting a tattoo for at least 15 years. You know, I thought about it. I thought about it, what it meant to me, what I wanted to express. And then I spoke to my mum and dad and said, hey, I'm thinking about getting this done. Is that cool? And they were down with it. And then I talked to my sister and my brother, and I was at that point in my life where it was the right expression. And the only tattoo I would have gotten would have been this one here to represent what I do and who I am. I am going to be getting more in the future here, but they are going to be once I've gone through certain signposts, I guess, as I move forward here.
Well, life stages.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, the huge one, the next step in my life is the reacquisition of the language or the reo. Being here, carving was my first step back into the culture, and now the next would be through with my wife and I is to really developing my own ability to speak Māori, which I don't have a huge grasp of it now, just for being away so long. And I was brought up in a generation that my mum works in the language system back home. She teaches biculturalism, and then when we were going through school, that was something that was not at all
encouraged. Are Maori children being taught the original Maori tongue today?
Yeah, absolutely. It's huge in the last 10 years. But then when I went to school, I asked my mum why I wasn't going to be speaking Maori, and she said it's a language that had no value. And so that's how deeply ingrained the lack of identity was at that point. And that's because my mum was a teacher.
What about your parents and tattoos? Do they have traditional tattoos or any tattoos?
Nope.
But when your generation came up saying, I want them, you're saying they embraced that? Did they see it as a throwback, a good thing, a re-embracing of culture?
I guess I'm part of the generation that was kind of stuck in the tail end of the Tonga Suppression Act, in that my mother and father were brought up to think that the Māori culture, as it sense, had no value. And so they didn't instill that in us. And it wasn't until my sister had her child in the Kōangarea, which was the language program, that she really became heavily involved. And so she was the first one from my siblings, and she was my older sister. And then my brother and I have kind of come into it from whatever angles we felt comfortable with. And for us, for me, it was the carving. And then once I have my real skills, my language skills have developed more, I feel then I'd be more comfortable to get the second stage of my tattoo, which would be a design to represent that struggle.
Karen, what have you found Maori people's thinking about American interest in their tattoos? Do they welcome it? Do they not? There are some, what I see is kind of Maori designs that have come into the American tattoo vernacular.
Yes.
I even saw, is it Mike Tyson who's got some kind of quasi-Maori looking thing on his face these days? Do they welcome this emulation or not?
This Moko style of tattooing is called kiritūhi.
Yeah.
And this has been a point of controversy for sure. Some Moko practitioners believe it to be a Maori birthright because of the spiritual knowledge that accompanies Moko. And many Maori feel that whites, non-native people have exploited so much of Maori land and language and customs and beliefs that it's just one other way of sort of exploiting something that doesn't belong to them. So some Moko artists are comfortable with tattooing these Moko style designs on non-Maori people, and at that point it is not Moko, it is a tattoo.
Yeah.
Fadi, how do you feel about it when you see, I don't know, surfer dudes with sort of Moko-style tattoos?
I've run into a couple of people that have had them, and I've asked if they have any idea what they mean, and they're like, oh, no, I thought it was cool. I saw a guy in Cambridge that had a face tattooed on his arm that was from an exhibit in London. I think it was at the London Museum, and he'd seen the picture online and thought, oh, that was really cool, and put it on his arm. And I went up and asked him, I said, do you have any idea what the form is? And he goes, no, I just thought it was cool. And so when you get things like that, I'm horrified and stunned. And then you get other people who have a real reverence for the Māori culture and what it is and its background. And if they approach the style of tattooing with a sense of respect and I think that there is a balance that can be struck, and again, it's kiritūhi. It's a form of Māori style tattooing that doesn't have the deeper significance of moko. And if it's done properly and if it's done well, I have no problems with it. But I don't think it should be called moko. It's a form
of something
that's tribally influenced.
How does it work in New Zealand these days? Again, I'm looking at these photos, the Māori people with quite contemporary. I mean, these are people right now, and they may have a full facial tattoo, the entire a face very elaborately tattooed, or just the chin, or around the nose or eyes. When such a person in New Zealand today, I don't know, goes down to the post office, to the, let's say, white postmaster or anything else, is it even remarked upon? Is it seen as a statement? Is it seen as unremarkable?
Typically, it's not remarked on. There's been such a resurgence in the last 10 years. There's more, expression of Māori identity and culture in New Zealand than there has been ever. And so when you see, Māori going down with moko, it's not remarked on as much as it used to be. Something like the photo there with the guys from the Mongrel Mob.
Now, I'm looking at one here. This looks like some kind of New Zealand Māori gangster, too,
yeah,
as far as I can see. There's a big tattoo right across this young man's face that says Mongrel for life, and then all across his chin in deep blue or green, mongrelism. What is that about, Karen? You know the exhibit.
Yeah. In the 1970s, we saw a real resurgence of moko in Maori communities coming out of prison and in urban gangs. 1962, the Tohunga Suppression Act ban was lifted, and so by the 1970s, people started to reclaim some of these symbols in a way of taking the very symbols that were alienated from them for so long and using
them. From the outlaw fringe in, it seems.
Exactly. So the gangs were taking the symbols and creating some group cohesion and gang identity, and also subverting these very symbols that were illegal for them to use for so long. Shortly thereafter, a group of more traditional Maori people who were taking these symbols and reclaiming their heritage, celebrating their ancestry and lineage, reclaiming these symbols. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because it's very conformist, actually. It's conforming to an aesthetic vocabulary that's time-honored, but not counterculture at all within the community, but perhaps seen as counterculture in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s when Hans took his photographs in 1998.
Well, let me get a quick call here from Brookline, New Hampshire. Hi, Lori. You're on the air.
Hi. This is Lori at Electric Angel Tattoo, and I really... tattooing is really good and solid in American culture at this point. It's as solid as going to the hairdressers. 10 years ago, I had a priest come in, and this is what made me know that it was really mainstream. The priest came in and picked out a design that he wanted, had me do some work on it, and he was sitting in the chair getting this work done, and some of his parishioners came in. And they looked, and there was their priest in a tattoo shop getting a tattoo.
So there you are at Electric Angel Tattoo. What do you think most of your customers are looking for or looking to express, Lori, when they come in?
Well, it is really all across the board. There are some people that are still, you know, they just want their cute little tattoo. It is a rite of passage for a lot of people. You know, we have the 18-year-old age limit, so... You know, when they hit 18, I get people coming in on, you know, first thing on their 18th birthday, and they can't wait until they can come in.
And when my guest Fare, who's Maori himself, says he's a little taken aback at what looks to him like the randomness of American tattoos, what do you say, Lori, as a tattoo person?
That has changed quite a bit. People are thinking a lot more. They're expecting a lot more. They're expecting... real artists when they go into shops now, and not just trace and color people. The expectations are much higher. The thought processes are much higher. The number of little cartoon characters and things like that I've done has just plummeted over the years. And people are putting a lot more time into things. There are a lot of very personal things, a lot of family-oriented things, a lot of memorial pieces.
Lori, we hear it. There's the report from the front line of tattooing at the Electric Angel Tattoo Parlor in Brookline, New Hampshire. Lori, thanks for your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about an old, original tattoo body art culture, the Maori people of New Zealand. And America's tattoo culture, tattoo craze today. My guests, Karen Kramer Russell, is curator of Native American arts at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts. They've got an exhibit of photographs of Maori tattoo art on through the rest of this year. You can see samples from it at our website, onpointradio.org. They are bold, they are high and proud on the body, right on to the face. Spirals, clearly a lot of very traditional design sensibility at work in these. Fare Heike joins us in the studio as well. He's a Maori bone carver himself. Bone and wood carving very much related to tattoo art in the Maori tradition. He's got the Mauana Nui Designs located in Watertown, Massachusetts. You can link to his website at ourzonpointradio.org. Rob's calling from Richland, Washington, out in Washington State. Rob, great to have you. What do you know?
Hey, Tom. I think it's a great show. It's especially relevant to me as a parent. My daughter's a freshman at SUNY Stony Brook back east.
Yeah.
And she's been telling us that she's thinking and has thought for years of getting a tattoo, which is a great and scary thought. And your show is pointing out something that really troubles me in a way, which is that the tattoo thing is becoming sort of a pop culture acceptable thing of making your statement, even if you have no idea what the statement actually is. You know, the fellow that's representing the Maori tradition here said he was horrified or shocked at a person who would use these symbols unknowingly. And the person who was Mormon who called in?
Yes.
I think he talked about it was a desecration of the body. People that feel that way, they sometimes do things too. So my thoughts about my daughter having a tattoo is some type of, you know, I think it's bold and exciting in a way, but it's also potentially costly or even dangerous with people that misunderstand or don't like what they don't understand. Especially she's thinking of something in Sanskrit or Arabic, and that could be very potentially scary or even dangerous, especially since tattoos at this point are not reversible very easily.
Rob, do you get a sense, though, that your daughter heading into college is off in the midst of a quite different culture where tattoos are just seen in a much more accepting way?
Absolutely. That's the thing that concerns me, though. I think, you know, the idea of pop culture worries me that lots of things are acceptable that have not been, and I've heard from her. She's rejected a number of those on campus that are involving use of drugs and sexuality. She's rejected those, but the artistic aspect, the aesthetic aspect of tattooing is something that's very potentially positive and even spiritually beneficial, I think, in some ways, but it's also subject to real misunderstanding at the pop culture level of, you know.
Yeah. Rob, we've got it. We hear the father kind of agonizing there over the meaning and implications. Let me turn to New York and Professor Mary Cossett, professor of sociology. She's at the at Purchase College, State University of New York, coordinates the Media, Society, and Arts program there, and has spent about a decade researching American tattoo culture. I understand she broke her ankle in the last day or so. So, Mary, you're a trooper for being here. Thank you very much for joining us. Mary joins us from Brooklyn, New York. Mary, speak to our caller, Rob, in Washington State about the state and meaning of American tattoo culture today. Can you give it a character? Is it a commercial character? Is it a cultural character? How do you describe what's going on with American tattoos?
Well, as Karen mentioned, tattoos really have numerous meanings today, and a person's social class or their gender, race, occupation, and age will all influence the individual tattoo experiences, you know, the motivations behind getting a tattoo, you know, where you get it, whether it's public and private, the image you choose. It's all highly contingent. So it's really quite complicated. But I think something to consider is that all human beings have this self-retouching impulse, regardless of culture or historical period. And today, many people are beginning to view the body as this sort of empty canvas that can be sort of molded and sucked and stapled and inked as well. And I think tattoos fit into a larger bodywork landscape, much like plastic surgery, also self-help. So it's rather complicated.
You've got a paper out a year or two ago entitled An Ironic Fad, The Commodification and Consumption of Tattoos. When you hear my guest Fadeh Heike, who's Maori himself, say he looks at American tattoos and he's kind of upset by what appears to be the design randomness on the human body, what's your thought there?
Well, I can understand certainly and respect where he's coming from. And this, the idea that there's sort of legitimate reasons for getting a tattoo and then less than legitimate reasons should probably be considered within the larger context of globalization and the whole, like, co-opting of cultural practices like yoga from India or acupuncture for China. And so tattoos sort of fit in there as well. So I can definitely see where he's coming from, and there's really a range of motivations and functions of tattooing in the United States right now.
Do you expect this to sort of come and go in waves? I mean, these numbers, 26 to 40, 40% of Americans, this is a Pew Research Center poll just last year, 40% have been tattooed, 18 to 25, 36%, and they've still got years to get it done. Might this be a wave that recedes at some point, or are we headed into a period, as you say, where the body is seen for on the long term as a canvas to be tattooed?
Right. Well, I don't want to make any predictions, but one thing that I know for sure from talking to people over the last decade or so is that for whatever reason people get tattoos, they really seem to work.
What do you mean by that, by work?
That they might have spiritual or emotional needs that are satisfied. They connect people to significant groups, or perhaps just the act or the ritual of getting a tattoo is pleasurable.
So they're gratifying. They're maybe even empowering.
Absolutely.
Very often.
Especially for women. The Mormon caller that talked about the sanctity of the body and how the body is pure and should not be modified, that's interesting because I've spoken to a number of women that get tattoos specifically to sort of subvert the idea of a natural or pure female body that should not be messed with. And to put a tattoo on the body is quite empowering for them.
Let's take a call from Kingston, Rhode Island, and Stacy. Hi, Stacy, you're on the air.
Hi. Should I turn my radio way down?
That'd be good.
Okay. This is my story. My great-great-grandmother's Blackfeet Indian. Her and her sister, after they were pushed out of their tribal lands in Montana, migrated across Canada down into New Hampshire mm-hmm. to work in the mills, mm-hmm. where she met my great-great-grandfather,
okay.
who was African-American.
Okay.
My mom, this is her great-grandparents, at the age of 38, got a tattoo on her shoulder, a butterfly. And my dad, who was in the Army, never got a tattoo. He was very much against it. He was raised Catholic. I was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was like a midlife kind of crisis thing for her when she did it. But she did it just before my 18th birthday. And she showed it to us kids before she even showed it to my dad, and till summer before. I think my dad ever saw it. And I never knew there was any kind of disruption over it. She accepted it, and she showed it off and loved it. No one else in our family has been tattooed, and on my 18th birthday, I waited for my 18th birthday. I was in high school, and I got a little tattoo on my shoulder that, and I was petrified of needles and getting it done, but I wanted to do it.
What image, Stacy? A butterfly like your mom?
No, I it's the symbolism, and I think that it actually is in part of my genetics because after I got the tattoo, which was a little heart on my shoulder, it's just my personality. I wore my heart on my sleeve, and I'm a caregiver. And I never got another one, and then started wanting one as the culture, the American culture, became more acceptable, tattoos, and it was a big thing in my high school.
Did you feel like it was somehow connecting you to your Blackfoot Indian ancestry, even though it was a heart, or in your mom's case, a butterfly, not exactly Native American traditions?
I don't know where my mom got the idea to get a tattoo came from. I knew that my father was very anti-tattoo. And I don't know, she never told me why, except she always wanted one, she said. And she never talked about her great-grandmother.
Yeah, Stacey, we got it. It sounds like it was empowering for you, Mary Cossett. This seems to be an example of what you're describing, a young woman who felt somehow empowered in her own personality by representing it on her shoulder.
Right. So some people look at their tattoos as really functional and ritualistic, much like tattooing in ancient societies. They're used to commemorate significant events, to connect people to significant others, and I think this is just a case of that. And regardless of what the image itself is, as if, a butterfly is somehow less than, any other symbol. For her, it's very meaningful.
In the process of studying tattoos, you've gained a few yourself. Five, I think, Mary.
Yes.
How do you decide what to have inked on into your skin?
Well, that really wasn't too much of an issue for me because the idea of committing to a particular image seemed absurd. I got tattoos simply because I was interested in undergoing the ritual myself because people had talked about it in such a positive way. So I decided to do it.
And did you, what, I mean, do you have hearts and, I don't know, a crucifix, a mom?
I have traditional American tattoos, like folk style tattoos. Mm-hmm. I have an anchor, I have birds, I have a sacred heart, I have a dagger.
There you go. That's right down the line of tradition.
Right.
Let's take a call from Dottie in Beverly Farms, Massachusetts. Hi, Dottie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I had my first tattoo when I was 40. And it was, you know, hearkening back to what the gal in New York just said, it was quite orgasmic for me. It was in the back of my neck, and the tattoo artist who was doing it was kind of taken aback at how much I was enjoying it.
You mean actually getting the tattoo needled in was orgasmic? Holy smokes.
Phenomenal. It was the most incredible experience.
I thought it hurt.
No, it did not hurt. And so I went back and got two more. And the last one that I got, I went with my daughter. We had a mother-daughter tattoo day.
Oh, boy.
And we had the pleasure of going to a Maori artist in Seabrook. He practices in Seabrook as well as L.A. He's bicoastal.
So is it on your face?
No, on my ankle.
Is that Trevor?
His name is Trevor Marshall. Yeah. He's phenomenal. And I told him what I wanted it. He drew it. He did it. And then he did my daughter. It was incredible.
So, and this is someone that my guest Fare knows.
Yeah, do, I'm not sure.
And he's putting Maori tattoos on whoever comes.
He's been doing it for quite a long time. He's an amazing artist. He does incredible work. I've actually seen him, and you know, I've seen his work up in Seabrook, and then met him at a hangi put on by the New Zealand consular up here, Simon Lemming. He's been involved in the tradition for a long time. He's done a lot of good work.
So there you are, Dottie, with a South Pacific tattoo tradition on your ankle now. What does that bring you?
I love the idea of permanent jewelry. I have a bracelet that looks like Celtic artwork, and I have a Celtic knot on my neck, the beginning of my addiction to it. If it weren't so expensive, I'd continue to do it. But I insist on doing it where people can see it. I'm not about privacy and titillation and things like that. I believe, as the Maori people do, that it is artwork. However, having just seen some documentaries on the tattoos that the Russian prison system has inspired, I mean, every single tattoo these men get ascribed to a certain crime they've committed,
yeah,
and their hierarchy in the prison. I saw the movie Eastern Promises with Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, yeah, quite a film and quite a tattoo
horrified.
Scene there. Not to
horrified.
Mention, I mean, you've got your sort of Japanese Yakuza gangster tattoo tradition, but what about it? There's all kinds of traditions.
Well, absolutely there are, and I do have Native American blood as well, so I honor the fact that, you know, they go through different processes of pain and, you know, not mutilation, but I think body glorification.
But not in your case, Dottie. You've got body jewelry as you see it, and we thank you for sharing that. Mary Cossett, it seems just kind of, again, an omnivorous American public here, pulling tattoos up from any and every corner. Do you see these eventually moving toward some kind of deeper tradition over time, or is it always going to be a smorgasbord in the USA?
What tradition are you speaking of?
Well, I mean, do these meld into one? You know, here with the Maori, over centuries, eons, who knows? They've got a more or less consistent tradition. Will Americans always draw from this whole globalized planet we live on now?
Yeah, well, within this era of globalization and its sort of and cultural co-optation and sort of a cut-and-paste culture, I'm wary of sort of agreeing to the idea that it's going to form into one coherent
mm-hmm.
tradition. I would say there's like a multiplicity of traditions that are being formed, and certainly you've heard many different takes on tattooing the United States today, and this is just a small range of them.
No kidding. Mary Cossett at Purchase College, State University of New York. Very good of you to be with us from Brooklyn today. Thanks a lot for joining
us,
Mary.
Thank you.
And I guess, Fare, I just got to ask you, you know, you see all these Americans, you hear all these Americans talking about their way to the tattoo. You said earlier it was a little appalling to the randomness of what's chosen, and yet they're looking for meaning. You can hear some strength drawn somehow. What do you make of it?
I think that's great. You know, if they can find a form of tattoo that empowers them in some way, that connects them to a certain point in their life. I guess my unease was at the randomness of maybe how things were picked. You know, when he was talking about Sanskrit or Arabic, I guess what I would like to see is maybe, or, you know, is happening, as mentioned by Laurie up in Electric
Angel.
Mm-hmm. Electric Angel, is that there's more thought going into it. And I think as long as people have a reverence for what they're doing on their body, I guess it will keep developing and changing and growing.
We'll go out with the tune Moko. That is the word for Maori tattoo by Moana and the Moa Hunters. Karen Kramer-Russell is curator at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, where this exhibit goes on, Body Politics. Thanks very much for being with us, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Fare Hake, just great to have you today. Thanks so much for coming
in. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Karen, for the exhibit as well.
And there we go with the tattoos. OnPointRadio.org, you can see them all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.